Today's program is brought to you by Union Beer Distributors. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
I'm Laura Stanley, host of Inside School Food. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's a Tuesday, March 3rd, 2015. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. Thanks to our sponsors, Union Beer Distributors, supplier of world-class ales and lagers. If you have questions for our guests today, you can tweet @beer_sessions and call us in the studio, 718-497-2128. We're wild today. There's a storm out. I was stuck in a car.
Weather. Oh, God.
Our other guest, Brendan Wilcox, in a car somewhere. It's New York City. Jimmy Ludwig.
Hey. How you doing, Jimmy?
All right, man.
It is great to be back. Jimmy Ludwig, the Happy Hour Guys, thehappyhourguys.com. Got big news today, so let me know when I can say it. Should I say now?
No, tell me after.
All right.
But you're the guy that just tweeted. He tweeted the other day, said, Wingman Jimmy, and now you're on the show. So I guess if you want to be on the show, you just go @beer_sessions
and ask to
say
be the
wingman. Yeah.
No, big news for the Happy Hour Guys, so we should talk about that.
A lot to look forward to. James Ty, Beer Acolyte, how are you, buddy?
Doing well, Jimmy. How are you?
Good to see you, man. And our special guest, it's kind of a Cicerone and food and beer pairing theme. We got Julia Hertz from the Brewers Association.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Jimmy.
Thanks for coming on, Julia.
Thanks for having me.
It's a room full of J's tonight.
Yeah. It is the J show
until Brendan gets here.
Well, it's the Jimmy and Jimmy show.
Yeah, man, it is the Jimmy show. Jimmy cubed this week.
Well, let's cut to the chase. So, Julia Hertz, you're here in New York City. You're pushing your new beer and food stuff from the Brewers Association.
We're making it available.
Yes,
craftbeer.com beer and food course. Super excited. 60-plus pages of free goodness of what's going on in beer and food from a certified Cicerone, my part of it, as co-author, and then Chef Adam Dooley, who's a Culinary Institute of America trained chef. And this is from the Brewers Association, our kind of guide on beer and food. If you want to get started, this is the free resource for you available on craftbeer.com.
Food pairing, the best.
The best.
It sure is. The other day for Beer Week, James Ty and Brendan Woodcock, we'll talk about that when he comes in. They did it. We call it Cicerone versus Cicerone pairing. And they had five.
I saw that crazy picture.
It was great. Five foods, and they each picked a beer.
James so tame, though. He actually looked angry in that picture.
Oh, you should have seen me after that picture was taken.
But I heard you won, so what's the problem?
Oh, no problem. Not at all. I mean, Brendan and I, we're all good.
How did you win? What was the, for people who didn't know about the event, well, how did it go? What was the scoring?
Right. Well, it was pretty much, you know, Cicerone versus Cicerone, five courses. The attendees, guests, they got to choose, you know, who, quote unquote, won which particular course. So, you know, it was just tallied up points.
Man. So was it close or did you just blow them out?
Oh, it was close, obviously. It was close. Brendan's got his chops going on, too. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
It was a really great experience. I mean, there were so many cool things that happened in New York City Beer Week, and James came to me over a month ago and made a suggestion. And it was a great event, and we'll definitely do it again. And from it, the pairings were good. I mean, you guys each picked one dish, and it was very simple. It was like you picked a vegetable dish.
Right.
So it was like roasted parsnips and Brussels sprouts.
Yep.
And then Brendan picked like scallops and bacon.
So by the way, that sounds hard to pair to. I mean, those are too challenging.
You threw them into the fire right away.
Yeah.
And then we just had like a smoked pork, you know, dish, and then we had a Stilton, and there was a surprise dish at the end, which was like Belgian frites with some chocolate, you know. But how do you do it, Julie? So let's go back to this basic program because it's kind of a big deal right now. So you have a new beer and food course that you're gearing towards culinary education.
Tell us
a little bit how this started and a little overview, because I think it's pretty interesting. I think more and more people want to know about beer and food.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I know you're listening to Jimmy, the show, and Heritage is listened to all over. But, you know, in being in New York and the food capital especially, great opportunity to talk up how foodies keep hearing about craft beer. They know about craft beer, but they're not necessarily empowered to teach and lead in craft beer or pair with it, because as they came of age, the resources to where they were professionally trained was mostly based on wine.
Yeah.
So this is really just taking claim to where beer is. I mean, beer is the number one beverage in the United States, $36 billion in wine sales, $65 billion for spirits. You have to combine those and you match the $100 billion in beer.
Wow.
So why wouldn't we in the United States have our culinary thought leaders, well-educated and equipped to pair with beer. So we're at the Brewers Association and craftbeer.com trying to really get forth what we think is a great starting point. And then from there, you know, beer's a journey, our appreciation in fine foods, all our hobbies, this and that. It's all a journey. You just use different things as trigger points to kind of panel your, you know, fuel your passions, and you get information from many different places. But it's overdue, I think, to really have succinct info on how to empower people to pair, at least in enough confidence that they can talk about it and lead others.
And I think also, I mean, at white tablecloth restaurants especially, to have the sort of cojones to put it on the menu.
Cojones.
You know what I mean? To, yeah, I said that. Yeah,
it's cojones. Not so ballsy to have to do that,
right?
Though.
But to because a lot of places, I think it's a slow battle, but it seems to be, it's being won. But, you know, to go to a white tablecloth restaurant and see a $3.75 being offered as a meal pairing, just like a bottle of wine, a $3.75 of beer, you know, it's like that's beginning to happen, but I think it needs to happen more.
Yeah, it's beginning to happen. It's still the early days. Let's face it, us beer lovers and everybody listening, I mean, we're still fighting just to get beer in a flipping glass, you know? So from there, we have made progress, but at the same time, putting it on the menu doesn't mean just slapping it on. You've got to have a beverage director that knows what they're doing.
Yeah, I said a 375, I meant a 750. I mean, a bomber, you know, like a bottle of wine at the table.
22 ounce. Yeah, the like larger, what I call dinner table bottles of beer, because we're going to split those when they're more ounce in the bottle and share them with dinner instead of a 12 ounce, which is more of a single serving.
Like you would with a bottle of wine.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. But there's a lot of room to grow, and it's just super exciting times because, I mean, I was just at the James Beard House Foundation house this morning, and they're even saying, you know, it's 5-7 years ago, we might not have been able really equipped to know and understand what we could do to support to have this type of dinner. And now today we recognize there's an audience for it.
Hmm. Well, that's great.
So what are some particulars of the program?
This course is 60 pages, starts with the introduction of what's going on beer history-wise. Like, how did we get here? How is there a flavor revolution? Why is there a balance of, like, globalization of beer, localization of beer? Both are good. Big beer, small beer. I mean, there's so much going on. And then from there, you break down the ingredients for chef-minded talk. Where's the flavor come from? You know, the basic ingredients, malt, hops, water, yeast. And then we start to go into pairing and the styles. So craftbeer.com has 77 plus beer styles. And by the way, we're dropping a press release on Thursday, and I can tease it now, where we've taken a 2-year study of the Brewers Association style guidelines, which were written for judges, the beer judge certification styles, written for judges. And we've said, look, we want the beer lover to have access to consumer-centric, culturally rich information that's written for them. So we've taken 77 styles and broken them out in a format that you guys have never seen. And we're very excited about that. And it pulls 20 of those styles and overviews them. And then we take you through 10 beer styles to specifically taste and talk you through it. It's a self-directed course. So that's one thing. The biggest question we've been asked is, where can we take it? You know, who can teach it to us? And maybe one day we'll get to that. But so there's everything from beer styles A to Z of all the list of triggers, from alcohol to yeast and water, to, you know, flavor of beer 1 to 6, crisp and clean, hoppy and bitter, malty and sweet. The way we package it, we really feel is not just for, you know, retail and the culinary side, but also for beer lovers. And then, you know, we take you through a self-directed tasting. We have 5 pairings, and we put those core beers, like an IPA, with 4 different foods each, and so you get 20 different ways to go, and we show the diversity. And then we always emphasize throughout the course that pairing is personal, perception is personal. I might try this great IPA or pale ale, and James next to me is going to taste different things from it than I might, because he's, from his experience, his likability in things, and his sense of palate, is going to zone in on maybe different things that exist there. So we recognize all throughout is there's no one right way to pair, but here's a guideline to start.
Human palate is like a fingerprint.
Absolutely.
Everybody's
love
different.
That line. Love that
Jimmy,
line.
Jimmy, poetry.
Dude, totally true.
That's what I'm here for, Jimmy. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
He's the wingman.
That's what I'm here for.
No, but I think that's a critical piece, is that Julia is actually touching upon the fact that you're talking about these style descriptions, and they're so esoteric for a lot of people. I mean, the average person not really going to talk about phenols, esters, and to make it accessible for them, I think is a really big role, and kudos for you for driving that.
Yeah, it's kind of time. I mean, beer can be overwhelming, even though the more you learn, the less overwhelming it gets. But once you learn what you like, I like bitter-centric things. I don't. I like sweet-centric things. You know, if you can steer people to what they like first and then pick beer styles from there, you're going to have a much easier time, especially people in restaurants that are guiding them. That's what wine sommeliers do. Mm-hmm. Although wine kind of got it wrong, you know, boxing people into a corner of what the wine is supposed to go to. Instead of going for what their palate is built for. I mean, there's wine professionals out there. Tim Hanoi is an amazing man doing research. He talks about your vino type, and I'm very interested in the research he's doing. And it's saying, like, we're not all the same shoe size. Don't put everybody in the same size shoe. Same thing with the palate.
But isn't it about – it's also, like you say, it's about empowering servers and people who are putting together menus. I mean, my dad is a Navy guy who – palate is not his thing, you know. Yeah. But he loves to tell a story about going to a restaurant. He's like, I went to – my dad sounds like Yosemite Sam. I went to a restaurant one time, and the waiter started talking about wine, and it was like he was having a sexual experience. It was amazing, just to watch him talk about it. So if you can empower servers to do that with beer.
Yeah.
You know, whereas before you couldn't. I think that's a big deal because it will make an impression on people.
Well, and to not take it so seriously that you're so empowered that you think what people are supposed to want. That's where retail gets it wrong. So we need people in the marketplace, no matter what they're sharing in the food world experience, guiding their customers along based on what the customer already likes. Mm. Because that, to me, is just so much more respectful to the individual's experience and already pre-biased to what they're biased towards.
And responsive, too.
Yeah.
Respective and responsive.
Julia, what are some things that you're doing while you're in New York related to this? Are you going to the dinners? Are you going to
We're hosting a non-public dinner at Danielle tomorrow night, which is super exciting.
Does that mean private, non-public?
Yes, it does.
Private. I mean,
Jimmy, you weren't invited. I wasn't invited.
No, I'm not invited.
Well, it's very small. I'd like to do more. So dinners to educate media. I do a lot of consumer things. I missed New York Beer Week. I mean, there's 100 beer weeks. We put on American Craft Beer Week. I love that you guys have such a rich culture, and kudos to you guys for growing this beer week and giving it a yearly anchor for celebrating the scene, the advanced beer scene here in the New York greater area. But so interviews and just really trying to get out into the marketplace, get into retail, see what's going on. James took me to Tap 307, Tap House. Room 307. I was at Tourist last night. And I really want to go sit through dinner in the back of the house, met chef, and that was exciting. So market visit to really get a sense of what's going on. And yeah, I mean, I think where New York goes, others will follow, although New York's behind in certain things. Look at San Diego's beer culture. Look at Denver's beer culture. Look at Portland. 50% of the beer sold in Portland, Oregon is made in the state of Oregon. That's where, you know, maybe an international city might not catch up like New York, D.C. or Chicago, but the beer scene here is popping, and it's super exciting to witness.
All right. Hey, that's a good intro. We're going to be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
You're listening to the Pool Boy 92 remix of Odetta Hartman's Creek Time. This is Beer Sessions Radio.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio and the Heritage Radio Network. It's a crazy day here in New York City. It's like the never-ending winter. Mm. Jimmy, what did you bring for us? Something to warm us up?
I did. I have to announce very special announcements for the Happy Hour guys. We're about to release an episode tomorrow, as a matter of fact, that actually features Julia Herz, one of our special guests, because it's an in-depth review of our time this year at GABF in 2014. The first time going back in 4 years and how much that has changed. And it actually is going to be our 300th video episode.
300, so, that is incredible.
Yeah, and in celebration of that, I've brought koozies for everyone. So, and they're, you know, they're koozies. They're also really bad cell phone cases. It may be a, you know, a set of shorts for a small dog. I don't know, but you know, they're
Jimmy,
useful.
You want to give one away?
I do. I want to give them all.
If you
away.
go to our Twitter, Maggie's is here now, @beer_sessions. You will get first one to happy tweet hour happy hour guys koozie.
You will get a happy hour guys koozie.
Good.
You have to mail it to him, Jimmy.
Dude, these are really, really important.
You know, koozies in this New York weather sound great and appropriate to me.
Okay, I'm handing one to Julie right now. There you go.
So, and Julie, talking about the new food and beer program that you're working on.
Yes.
So you're going to have a little event tomorrow night, private event at Restaurant Danielle.
Yep.
But I want to know, what are you going to do there? Is there a menu?
We have a 5-course pairing dinner that we've done test tasting in Boulder and New York at separate times to construct the menu. We've got Bill Kovaleski coming in from Victory.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
Bill, love him.
You know, Dave from Gun Hill, Eric from Columbus, Adam from Roadhouse in Wyoming. So we really do. I mean, I represent small and independent craft brewers, their beers, and, you know, the community brewing enthusiasts is who we want to really celebrate. And so when we do these dinners in the U.S., we try to get media there that really might not have access to understanding the excitement behind it, or they already get it, and then they're on top of that re-exposed to what's going on from the small brewer perspective. Because of the 3,200 breweries today, 99% are small and independent, and it's just a great thing. I mean, the whole craft brewing, the land grab for craft is on, the whole craft brewing movement has, I really think, put full flavor beer on the map in the U.S., and that's what I spend time on a day-to-day basis reminding everybody.
Yeah. Well, what are you going to do at this event? Are you gonna have
it's a working dinner,
food,
media roundtable. News happens from these kind of meals. So my Chef Adam, who co-wrote the craftbeer.com beer and food course with me, is there. He represents the menu. I'll represent the beers as well as the brewers representing their own beers. But they share their stories. And, I mean, for 2 hours, we really just continue to serve and talk. And then we have a roundtable discussion. And that's where a lot of news happens, where media are just raising their hand of like, well, yeah, but what about this issue? And what's going on? On here, I heard about it. I mean,
I guess what I'm getting at is when you talk going deeper into the food and beer program.
Oh, got it.
Is there like a new cuisine or new beer cuisine you guys are pitching? Or are you just trying to raise awareness?
We are raising awareness. I think beer cuisine will have its day. We're not there yet. We're still working with restaurants on trying to locally source most of the ingredients. That's part of the movement. Although there is some imported products on the menu, truffles and, you know, a cheese from Cork, Ireland. But when it comes to beer and food pairing, back to there's no one right way or wrong way to do it. The cuisine works, and at least if I can just segue, like this is how I articulate it. I feel like craft beer picks up where wine leaves off. I mean, wine, the reason we all pair from it, and we came of age knowing this in training, is that wine has acidity. Acidity calms salt and fat, and then there's some flavor harmonies with the fruits and wines. You could go deeper than that, but that's the quick way to articulate it. Well, craft beer has both that too. Based on the beer style, you have varying acidity levels, which everyone forgets. But there is acid there to balance that salt and richness and, you know, animal fat, milk fat, oils. It gets calmed down from beer. And then the flavor harmonies of grilled, roast, and smoked meats are amazing with craft beer. So you've got a lot of flavor potential. The intensity match with craft beer is incredible. It's also less alcohol, so less alcohol per sip, which is great. You know, and then you've got hops that also cut through fat and balance the richness of foods. That's just the bitterness of hops, the flavor of hops. I could go on and on. I mean, have tropical fruit components, herbal components, what I call the forest components of pine and spruce. I mean, the floral components. So there's so much. Hops can act as your herbs. And so there's just really a tremendous amount. And then you throw the yeast in the mix and you've got flavor potential from the esters and phenols there that really just take beer to a whole nother level.
Julia, I could hear you talk about this all week. Just don't stop. It's amazing just to hear you talk about it.
I mean, it's become fun to articulate because you do it enough and and I'm not even professionally trained in food. And so somebody's to ask me how to pair something, I will just break down the components of the taste elements, sweet, salty, sour, bitter, umami. What do we have to work with? Then I'll look at the aromatic elements. What do we have volatile-wise? Aromatics. And then I'll look at the intensity and sensations. And then from there, I'll start to plug in what foods might work with it. So I'm very basic. I mean, I am not professionally trained in food. And I can still run around in the country doing this because that should be acceptable. We all shouldn't have to be trained in food. It's like, you know, the point is have fun in your own kitchen, you know, and you don't have to be schooled for that. You just have to know what you like.
Wow. So it's craftbeer.com, the beer and food course.
Absolutely. Download it off craftbeer.com.
Check it out. Now, talk about other training programs. I mean, I know that you're all three of you, James, Brandon, and Julie, you're all Master Cicerone.
We're
candidates.
Study buddies for the Master
Study
test,
buddies.
Yeah.
Are, yeah. And so let's get to some. I want to just talk specific beer and food pairing because I need some education.
Let's
too.
Let these guys talk.
So you guys recap the Cicerone versus Cicerone head to head beer and food pairing that you did. Maybe I'll throw out the food.
If we have to separate you, we will. They're on opposite sides of the studio, just so you know.
So you guys are studying for your Master Cicerone. Just tell us why you did the beer and food pairing, and then we get into some specific pairings.
Go ahead, Brent.
Sure, yeah. So this was an event the past Sunday for Beer Week, and James and I faced off, and fisticuffs almost erupted, but it was a fun time. We did five courses. Each of us picked a beer to go with a course. So we started vegetable, went seafood, then had a protein, had a Stilton, and then finished with a surprise. And so we, kind of took the whole broad dinner element, even though it was a Sunday afternoon. And our approach was somewhat different. I think I went more wild and trended towards acidity. And interesting new yeasts that were coming out. I think I had three or four beers that had some form of Brett in it. And James went more
traditional.
That's
risky, I would say. I mean, that's like a lot of people's palates aren't familiar with that.
Right, and you have different development. How aged were the beers? Were they tropical focused or more barnyard? I mean, what were you getting?
Well, so one was a pale ale from a local new brewery called Transmitter Brewing, and it was made with New York State ingredients, which was part of the Beer Week focus that Jimmy was
it was a smash beer.
Doing a smash beer. Yeah. State malt and state hops, not a single malt, single hop. And I think that with the Brett fermentation, it was actually going through something interesting at the time that didn't totally work on the pale ale spectrum. Had a little bit of acetaldehyde or a green apple note that, probably is very expected for where it was at its point in growth. And also, it's not like they had done that recipe a bajillion times. That was probably the first time they brewed that.
So the first pairing, it was roasted parsnips and roasted Brussels sprouts. Mm-hmm. That was James first. And then what were the beers that you guys paired with that? And how did it go over?
So that was the one I was just saying. It was kind of a an American pale ale take with a Brett finish. So a little bit dry. I was aiming to pair some of the hoppy qualities that I would expect in a pale ale with the inherent bitterness in Brussels sprouts, and probably try to match some of the sweetness in the malt backbone with some of the sweetness that might be in a parsnip. I don't know if it totally worked. I think it's a great beer, but sometimes when you're doing pairing, you actually have to try it.
Well, it's a risk, right? I mean, that's part is without great risk, great reward, right? You can't go one with the other. You can't play it safe in these things. Sometimes you have to either hit a home run or strike out swinging. I mean, but I think that's part of the fun, right? I mean,
absolutely.
People should be adventurous. They should be brave.
And then James went Saison, right?
Right. So I went with the other half, Lasteronde. That's their Saison. I was just telling Julia yesterday that I think I have an industry crush on those guys. It's just amazing.
You said man crush at the time.
No, I think I said industry.
Okay. Sorry.
We're not going to.
No, they're very handsome.
Most of the hops coming into the New York City area seem to be going to the other half.
Well,
a lot
we
of
are,
them,
right?
Yes.
For good reason. And so my strategy behind that pairing was, very conventional. It was all about affinities. So I was thinking, like a lot of peppery notes, like deep herbal notes. And I think it worked really well with the Brussels sprouts. And I allowed the parsnips to kind of like cut that, not cut it, but to contrast that with like that sweetness that would really come through and kind of balance out that dish, I thought.
So you've got sort of complementary pairings and you've got oppositional pairings, right? One highlights the other or one complements the other. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where you are in terms of what's happening on people's palates.
Yeah, and I think for the event itself, we wanted to actually be a little bit more informative. So we broke it down in terms of certain strategies of how you want to pair beer with food. Mm-hmm. Obviously you have affinities, you have contrast. We talked a little bit about echoing, mm-hmm. A little bit about
bridging
as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So and I think it was really great.
When you're studying for your Master's Cicerone, are those that's the vocabulary that you're using?
Well, that's the problem, and I can share some news here. I mean, Brewers Association and craftbeer.com is working with the Cicerone program, American Society of Brewing Chemists, and a doctor of genetics from the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. And through these four organizations, we've been meeting monthly to talk about the lexicon in pairing. And because there's no standardized lexicon, because it's so personal, we've actually, though, at least taken time to group together the common nouns and verbs. Accentuate, right, would be the same as increase, which might be the same as, enhance, to then leading towards. I mean, we all heard of complement, contrast, cut, and cleanse, and those are common words, but not everybody uses them the same way. And when Jimmy's pointing out from James' pairing, you know, you're either working more towards complement or contrast, I would argue really that contrast, to me at least, is tied to the taste elements, and complement is really tied where aromatic elements from the beverage tie into aromatic elements in the food.
See, so now we're getting into the argument stage, and this is more fun for me, right? So let's fight.
Wait, you have to use the old Michigan accent.
Okay, well, why don't you let's fight a little bit? What do you say?
I would rather hear his dad's accent.
Right, Yosemite Sam.
There's no fighting, but we are working through it as the main organizations that are out there, and it's what we've realized in the last several months. And we'll be doing a talk at the Craft Brewers Conference on our findings, and we're going to panel test some of these lexicon words that we're defining. Is that it's going to take years of work to really get far enough down the road from where the beer world is. The wine world has some of it, but I think if we keep this type of pace up and what we're talking about on these calls, the beer world will be teaching the wine world how to pair in certain tricks that is backed by science.
Absolutely.
Because so much what we say is not backed by science.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's about engendering conversation, like we're doing right now. Let's talk about it, and if one person has an idea about how one thing works and someone else has another, let's educate each other, and maybe one person wins, one person doesn't.
The second pairing that you guys did.
Went to, I think it was scallops and bacon, cooked with a Tilkin goose.
I hate all of those things.
Yeah, you had me at scallops and bacon. Seriously. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I think we found a recipe that had dry vermouth and just took that out and threw in the Tilkin.
Okay.
And sort of subbed that in, got a little bit of a sour note acidity in the dish. And then we actually had one old school wine drinker that wasn't really into beer comment on that pairing in particular, that he didn't like the goose on its own, 3-year-old. Blended lambic is not for everybody, I guess. But when he had it with the dish, it kind of, this is that bridging we were talking about, paired those elements of.
But Brandon, so you suggested the scallops and bacon as a dish to pair off. Mm. Why did you pick that dish?
I wanted to do something, seafood second, because we were picking vegetables first, and I felt like, maybe go that direction.
Umami bomb, too, though, to me. I mean, that's got a little, that sense of savoriness.
Yep.
That
it's hitting a certain part of the palate.
Yeah, fifth
big
basic
time.
Taste.
So it was absolutely that, and thinking about the order of the dishes, the order of the beers, and trying to keep it a tasting that could stand on its own if it were just a beer tasting, or stand on its own if it were just, someone having a meal. And then I think that absolutely umami, there's some sweetness that works with some of the oaky notes in the lambic, and then as well as some of the young lambic still in there, because it was a rather fresh example of
you
goose.
You picked the Tilkin goose. And James, what was your pairing for the scallops and bacon?
So if I remember correctly, and it has been a long beer week, so I paired that actually with the Midnight Sun Snowshoe Wit. So it was a very... not really coriander heavy example of the style. So my whole theory was to really kind of coax out the sweetness of the scallops, and for both of them to kind of balance themselves out and let the bacon really come out and kind of shine through.
And full disclosure, they were handicapped by what was available at Jimmy's number 43. So it wasn't like a fantasy pairing. It was what we had in cellar or what we had on draft.
But that's a very real-world handicap that you go to your fridge, it's dinner time, what am I going to drink?
And I think that's a good phrase that everyone should learn from this radio cast right now, which is let bacon shine through. I mean, let's just do that.
Thank you, Jimmy.
But you're welcome.
I bet what you guys got when you tasted the dish without any beverages, that's a dish constructed to need a beverage. It needs cutting. And, when you get the lemon on the side of your dish, there's a reason there. I was out to Indian food the other night. Night in Midtown, and they had lemon served with the soup and the main entree, and I'm like,
exactly.
They get it. So what happens in pairing for the big picture is your beer becomes that twist of lemon, or that sprig of parsley as a rest, or an herbal component that ties in. And that's the beautiful thing of pairing, is the beverage becomes a part of what you're consuming food and flavor wise instead of standing on its own and just something to throw back.
Mm-hmm. I will say, for me, the kind of food I like to eat, you have to have wine or beer with it. And that's just, when I eat something and it has the right flavors, that's what I want.
Yeah.
A lot of American food isn't like that, though. There's a lot of sandwiches. There are things that are so basic, your mouth almost dries out sometimes. But I do like food that calls out for a good beer or a wine.
Also, we're really heavy on the sweet side as Americans. I think there's a lot of sweetness in our in our diet generally, you know?
And fattiness.
Exactly, yeah. Sweet and fat.
Yeah, and sweet calms heat, sweet calms sweet, so like calms like. So if you put, you know, beer with something that's spicy and that heat, the residual sugar, higher styles, Doppelbocks are amazing for pairing, you know, English-style barley wines and the like. You're going to calm down spice-centric food. That wine, when you have alcohol, which is more of like a solvent on your tongue, opens up your tongue, the alcohol does, and so you're more susceptible to that heat. So you want something that's lower in alcohol and higher in residual sweetness. That's where beer can be like, boom, I got it. I'm ready to pair.
All right, guys. This is a great conversation. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Dylan, then we'll come right
back. We should talk about...
Today's program brought to you by Union Beer Distributors. In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks to our sponsor, Union Beer Distributors. Hey, we're out here at Roberta's in Bushwick, man. It's snowing out. Got Jimmy Ludwig, Julia Hertz, Brendan Woodcock, and James Ty. We're talking beer and food breweries. But first, James Ty. This is a funny day. Like, I was stuck on the road. Brendan was stuck on the road. It's snowing. Mm. And I walk in, and usually, you know, there's a six-pack of Brooklyn Lager and a six-pack of Sierra Nevada. I thought it was going to be, like, some trick pairing question. Like, what goes better, the lager or the IPA? So, James, why did you bring in the Brooklyn Lager?
So,
and I like it. It's great.
Right.
It
no, absolutely. Like, you know, in terms of context, we are, you know, I will unequivocally say we are living in the golden age of beer. And it's a fantastic place to be. And I love how the landscape is constantly changing. There are like all these different examples that are coming out from these fantastic breweries. But I think it would be remiss to forget about a lot of these greats that actually the current beers are, they're standing on the shoulders of these greats. Mm. You know, so we're talking about Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, which is, it's something that I cut my teeth on. And this is the reason why I'm in the industry right now. And Brooklyn Lager, too. So these are fantastic examples that I don't want people to forget about them. And so that's why I thought it was important to bring those in.
James, we should applaud you.
Yeah.
All right.
Well done. Yeah. Well articulated, absolutely. Too. Way to represent.
Yep.
He only had time to stop at the bodega. That's why.
No, this was strategic. I love the strategy, but the basics.
But New York bodegas aren't like that anymore. That's the other thing. I mean, you can go out into just about any bodega in New York, and where it used to be just these two, now there's the bodega in my neighborhood in Inwood has four refrigerators in it, and two of them are craft beer.
I'm from Denver. What's a bodega?
It's where you get everything you want. And it's usually within about 20 feet of your house. It should be. Yep. That's why I love New York. And people, sometimes people laugh and say, oh, you know, I wake up and I go to the corner and I get a coffee. I'm like, why don't you make coffee at home? It's like, because I live in New York City.
Because I go to the corner.
I can walk to the corner and get my coffee, you know? Same as beer. All right, cheers to you guys. So we're talking beer and food pairings, and let's do one more. So of the special pairings, you guys picked, you know, like the roasted vegetables and then a scallop dish. But then we thought about classic pairings. And Garrett Oliver's book, The Brewmaster's Table, I don't know if it's in his book, but he always talked about that. The classic pairing of Stilton and a barley wine. So we did that in our tasting, too.
Awesome.
I'm trying to give us, like, our listeners specific references of food and beer pairing. And I think that that's something we should put out there more, like these classic pairings.
Yeah, there's a lot of classic pairings. So and blue cheese, I mean, you can pick, there's many different blue cheeses. And there's actually some good domestic ones made now, too. But blue cheese and IPA mm-hmm. and barley wine
are
perfect yep. because you've got the herbal components from the hops, the more aggressive American barley wines. And then you've got the intensity match. You've got the bitterness from the hops that can calm down that richness from the dairy fat. So it is. It's a classic pairing, and they usually have a lot of flavor harmonies as
well. What about for the malt maniacs? If they love malty beers, what's a good pairing for them?
If they love malty beers?
Yeah.
What, with the blue cheese?
No. What's a good food pairing for a malt maniac, somebody who loves malty beers?
I mean, the classic. So now we're talking, you know, just pairing 101 is, you know, barbecue, very rich and sweet, with American pale ale or even to American strong ale and IPA. I mean, that's classic and easy.
You hear that, Joe? Joe's listening out there somewhere.
And American brown ales and back to Doppelbock. I mean, rich malt-centric beers.
Yep.
Some of my favorites.
And absolutely. I personally, you know, my wife's background is Indian, so I eat a lot of Indian food at home. And I think there's a trend to pair somewhat spicy food with IPAs. That's kind of been done, I think. And what you were talking about earlier, Julia, is, you know, actually throwing malt at that to calm some of that down, which I absolutely love that principle. So, you know, they'll talk about, like, you're in an English pub and there's a Thai dish or something.
Yeah.
And it's great with an English mild.
Huh.
And those kind of malty beers can actually handle heat really well, and also a lot of the other flavors that would be in those.
Cool. Toss out another food and let's match a beer with it just
good,
for fun.
Man. Well, how about James, do you want to say anything about classic food and beer pairings?
No, it's we're doing good right now.
Okay, so the surprise curveball that we had at the end of the pairing event Belgian frites covered in dark chocolate.
Yeah, that's insane. Who picked that?
Wait,
Wow. Jimmy, you're so naughty. Jimmy's naughty.
Frites covered with dark chocolate.
Well, the reason
so
it
happened
is last year we did an event, and Brendan's pick was McDonald's fries, which everyone thought was so radical. So I had to throw it back at him.
With Goza, yeah.
I just thought we had to have chocolate. I felt that in terms of like classic pairings, I think that dark chocolates should be in any beer pairing.
Right, but if one more restaurant tells me we're supposed to just pair the stout with the chocolate at the end, I'm going to say, hey, take this craftbeer.com beer and food course because I want you to go further.
So guess,
Julia,
what they picked? Wait,
yeah, so
the fries and the chocolate. What did you guys pick?
Yeah.
Well, we were at the mercy of what was in the fridge. Fortunately, Jimmy's fridge is pretty big and had
yeah,
a lot of options.
It's pretty expensive.
So I actually went with the triple there. It's from St. Fuyen.
Oh, nice.
It actually has a nice little herbal thing
going
on.
It's almost like a Saison triple.
Mm-hmm. Huh. And it, so I think that some of the strength of the triple helped cut through the alcohol in it, helped cut through some of the starchiness in the fries. And then I was going for what kind of created, and I wish it was a very popular dish, so I didn't get to try a lot of it, but a combination of the chocolate and some of the mintiness of that triple to go with like a mint chocolate thing.
And James, what did you pick to go with the chocolate fries?
Right, and in contrast, I went with Märzen beer from Westbrook, and so I tried to, where Brendan actually tried to go with the, like, approach the pairing from the fry angle, I went with the chocolate angle, and so like I try to find some affinities there. The intensity was right, and I think it worked. I personally like that pairing.
And then for, you know, and in terms of resources, like I mentioned, Garrett Oliver's book, Brewmaster's Table. Are there other books or authors out there who've been writing a lot about food and beer pairing?
I mean, sure. There's websites. There's books. Lucy Saunders is doing amazing. Sean Paxton. I mean, the list is. Don Feinberg is an importer, is doing great things. It goes on and on, at least in people that are getting better at it. But I do think the resources are thin.
So there's more to happen there. That's great.
And I want to add that, you know, as beer people, we tend to just kind of stick inside our own little circle. And I think with regards to these resources, I mean, there's so many other like there's a multitude of things out there. So I think about like Harold McGee and all the work that he's done.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know,
yes.
I think about
neurogastronomy.
Neurogastronomy.
Sure.
Yeah. And also Barb Stuckey, you know, Taste What
Barb,
You Miss.
Great so. Book, basic book on how we taste. I'm reading a lot of books from the wine people and a lot of books from the science side of how we taste because mm-hmm. it's all tied together. And a lot of that research has already been done. So beer people need to realize we don't have to reinvent the wheel on how we taste. But a lot of people still don't get, you know, you have orthonasal, the front nose smell of how you smell, but you have a nose or a mouth smell, sense of smell, which is what Barb Stuckey calls the mouth nose, and it's your retronasal and as
right,
a back
it's a,
retro.
It's a reflux, basically. It's what comes up the back of your throat and invigorates the, what is it called back there? That big bunch of nerves that are back there. I forget what it's called, but yeah. It's there. I swear to God.
your finger motions are getting
retinomized.
I talk with my hands.
Olfactory.
Brent is guessing.
The olfactory. Whatever. We should also mention that besides the two beers we've talked about already, there are two other beers that we should give some love to on this table.
Well, they're going to take over as soon as we start talking about
I know, but...
Give some love, Jimmy.
Well, no. Go ahead.
James, Julie, and I studied with a couple guys from out west, Orange County, California, so I brought one of their beers here to sort of pay homage to them as they couldn't be here today. So it's from the Rue Family Brewery. I brought a Black Tuesday. It's a bourbon barrel-aged imperial stout, about 19% alcohol.
Good God.
Yeah.
And I just want to say, you know, we're in an industry where there are a lot of nice people. I mean, across the board, the standard is really, really high.
Agreed.
I feel like these guys are the nicest people.
Yeah, and Patrick made master level. We studied with him, and he sat for the test in the fall. So Cicerone program is the beer world's version of the wine sommelier. They have 45,000 first level. They have close to 2,000 second level, of which the three of us here are. And then third level, master level, it is 9 people. I mean, we've studied with most of them. I've sat for the test with many of them. And this is a test that really, I mean, Ray Daniels, the predecessor to my job at the Brewers Association, started this program, and I'm intimate with, and I'm an advocate for beer education programs where people want to test their knowledge even further. And I mean, the master level is really like the Mount Everest or the doctorate in beer. And it's a very, very difficult test that is rewarding and painful in many ways.
Only 9 in the entire world.
Yeah.
Yes. But so what were the things? So Brandon and James, you've both taken the test. What were the aspects of it that were most challenging to you? Quickly.
Everything.
So it's oral, written, and then you know you have to demonstrate as well. So I think, you know, in terms of tasting, I think blind tasting was one of the harder parts for me. But then being on the spot, talking with certain people that are experts in their field, and they're asking you how to do their jobs. That's kind of intimidating.
That's why I'm coaching you with the food and beer pairing, guys. You got to listen to me. And talk about old school. So, Jimmy, will you open a Sierra Nevada Pale Ale for me, buddy?
Absolutely.
Because I know they're making it in Mill Valley. Is it Mill something? Mill Basin, North Carolina? Where's their new brewery?
Outside of Asheville.
Yeah, outside of Asheville.
It's called Mill Basin.
You know what? Let me, in order to make sure that it stays cool, let me put a Happy Hour Guys koozie on this.
And then I have another question for Julia. So, Julia, in my experience with food and beer pairing, I used to use a crutch because I always felt that it worked. And so if there's rules of food and beer pairing, I always felt that German wheat beers were the perfect go-to food pairing beer.
Why not? I mean, it depends, though. You could have something. I thought it was surprising.
You're supposed to
shoot
me down.
James put the you said the wit with the dessert, right?
No,
sorry. With the scallops, and that surprised me because that was an umami bomb and very strong and intense. If it worked, it worked. I mean, you got it. You know, life's short. Test what you want, and if it doesn't work, tweak it. And so if you're right in the German ales or lagers, go for it. And you're going to find, I mean, the way I articulate pairings is they're in three categories. Home run is like, oh my God, 1 + 1 = 5. Mm. Those are very hard to get to. 1 in 20 pairings that I will strategically do are like, you know, change your mindset on what can work well together. And then there's middle of the road. The beer didn't hurt the food didn't hurt the beer, and they go okay together. And then there's train wreck where it's a total clash. There's a chemical reaction going on in your mouth. It's salmon one with too hoppy an IPA and it goes to metallic. You know, it's that kind of thing. And the train wrecks happen. And what I get upset about is that they're not acknowledged and they're often on menus and they're not tested before they're placed there on the menu. So, yeah, I mean, have at it. What your beer style, if you have a base beer style, get to know what pairs well with that. But pay attention to when it's not working, too, and then steer clear and learn how to tweak it.
Mm. Do you have a home run you want to share with us?
I love fettuccine Alfredo with rosemary dusted over it and a really fresh American IPA because fettuccine Ooh. Is so rich. It's got a lot of umami, that Parmesan in there and everything. And then the IPA acts as that herbal component. And then you've got to tie into the rosemary. You can put some sage on top, too. It's very simple, great home run. Also, Flanders Red, super acidic beer, but that's light, not even 6%, give or take, alcohol, paired with a lentil soup, super salty lentil soup that's got some umami with beans, totally cultural, you know, ties to the side and to the wind. Who cares? That's a home run win, is, Flanders Red and lentil soup.
For me, Korean barbecue and ambers.
Ooh.
American ambers. Try that. Next time, try that.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yep. James, will you say that again? That sounded so good.
Korean barbecue.
But say for me. Say
and for me, American amber ales with Korean barbecue.
That's nice.
Yeah, that sounds good.
And just to chime in, I don't actually have any off the top home run pairings, but I do have a cheat code, which is saisons go with almost everything. That's along the vice beer line.
Then here's mine. Mine is like a kind of a wild Alaskan salmon with a German wheat beer.
I've got one.
Oh, all right.
I've got a bourbon barrel aged imperial stout with lovemaking.
Oh, yeah. Pairing can go with many things.
Yes.
Yeah.
True.
Yep. Jimmy. Yep. Crazy.
Yep.
Before or after Jimmy? The other Jimmy.
Yeah. Segue to Jimmy.
All right.
Uncomfortable in the room now.
No. I'm very comfortable.
I know what we're doing. Now I know what we're talking about, at least. And then this other beer that you brought, Julia, what is this?
It's homage to Jimmy. Jimmy, you are, what are you, like the Pope or the Godfather of whatever you are? Like you're,
which Jimmy?
You are.
You, right there. Come on.
You're amazing. And so I picked this up at Bottle to Table in, what was the train station?
Beer Table Pantry in Grand Central.
Beer Table Pantry in Grand Central. What a great little growler to go, mason jar to go with an eclectic bottle mix that I have personally not seen in a while. And so this is from San Francisco, and Almanac Brewing is doing ingredients of interest to them from farms, and it's basically, you know, farm to barrel to table concept. This is a sour ale that's aged in oak and then has blueberries. So the blueberry was their wild ingredient. Mm-hmm. And it's super subtle. I'm getting some sour ales really need food. This is a sour ale I could sip, you know, more than a half glass and be refreshed after every sip. And that's okay for the ones that need food. They should be strategically placed with them. But super fun one and a little bit of a splurge. Just wanted to bring you something nice.
It's great. Thank you so much. Yeah. I really love it. All right. Well, this has been a great show. We got the storm going on in New York City. Julia's in town. If you can sneak a press pass, get over to Danielle Restaurant tomorrow night.
Pay somebody off. Do it.
Say you know Charlie Papazian.
No, don't even tell them. Do that.
And we've had a great show. Thanks to our sponsors, Union Beer Distributors, have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to Jimmy, Julia, James, and Brendan for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Maggie Seiden and Justin Kennedy, and Maggie's sister, Ainsley, is in the booth tonight. All right, she's going to win a free Beer Sessions Radio T-shirt. And engineer Jack Inslee, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @Heritage_Radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.